Hello and welcome to the Health Hacks Podcast, the podcast for high-performing professional females looking for practical ways to optimize all areas of their health and wellness. At Health Hacks, we understand that as a busy female, you wear numerous hats throughout your working week. You're trying to juggle it all, while also looking to carve out time to prioritize your own goals. It's challenging. It's therefore our mission to channel your energy into the areas that are going to help give you the biggest bang for your buck, to really make significant changes to your lifestyle in the most efficient way possible. So at the moment, if you feel as though you need more energy, you want to feel more productive to improve the quality of your sleep, to lower stress, to increase confidence, to show up better in both your personal and your professional relationships, this podcast is for you. If it's time you prioritize your health, learn to fuel your body, found time for exercise, and said goodbye to fad diets and inconsistent behaviors for good, this podcast is for you. If it's time for you to step into the shoes of the high performer you know you can be, this is the right podcast for you. Join me and my guests as we take you through the Health Hacks Podcast. Hello, how are you? Today I'm joined by the wonderful Janice Benning on the podcast. Janice brought a ton of expertise and energy to the pod, and you'll be able to tell from the recording we have a startling amount in common that we discovered prior to hitting the record button, and we very much align in our coaching approach, a very practical approach to well-being. Janice used her own experience of burnout to inform the work that she does and in her founding of NeuroVitality, and we'll find out more about them in the recording itself. But the topic today was around resilience, personal resilience, as well as its place in society. It's something that I'm thinking about a lot personally, and you'll be able to tell. So I'll ask, how resilient do you feel at the moment? Are there things in your life that are rocking you and you wish that they didn't have quite such an effect? Would you love to have more trust in your response to situations? And would you love to build up your personal resilience and feel more in control in your day-to-day? This is what we're here to discuss on this week's episode. Before we go into the recording, as ever, if you're a fan of the show and you'd love to show your support, I'd appreciate it more than you realize, in all honesty. There are two ways to show your support for the show. The easiest is to hit the follow or subscribe button. You are probably listening to me on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. They are main platforms. Hit that follow or subscribe button. Or perhaps you have someone in your inner circle, someone close. Maybe it's a family member, a colleague, a friend, someone who you know wants to make changes to their health and well-being. Perhaps it's not resilience, but you know someone who is on a well-being journey. And if you found value in the podcast, perhaps they will too. Send it to them. Maybe it's a specific episode based on a conversation that you've had over coffee, or just send them the show. I would be eternally grateful. If you are interested in coaching, one-to-one coaching, as ever, my details are in the show notes below. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear about your lifestyle, but more so, I'd love to hear about your health goals for the remainder of the year. We're going into Q2. I don't know about you, but I've definitely felt with the clocks change, spring has sprung. The mornings are lighter. We have more time in the evenings to enjoy the outdoors. There's wonderful blossoms on all the trees. I just feel positive about the summer months to come. If you want to think about your health goals before we reach those summer months, you feel as though maybe it was a winter of hibernation, but now you feel you've woken up and you're ready to focus on you, get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, without further ado, let's get into this episode of the podcast with the wonderful Janice Benning. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Health Hacks Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Janice Benning. Janice is the founder and director of NeuroVitality, and we'll be finding out a lot more about the work they do later in the episode.
Janice has used her own experience of burnout in corporate life to work with and to educate others around this topic and much, much more. She's passionate about health and well-being in the constantly challenging and changing business world. And she joins us here today. We're actually going to be talking about resilience. And I've hit the record button because we were going into a lot of golden nuggets on this. I think we'll just hit record and we'll just go. But before we do
Perfect.
anything and we go into this huge topic, tell us more about you and the work that you do.
I think it is a huge topic. So I think we've got our work cut out to try and cover so much in a fairly short time. My background is that I was working in Edinburgh a number of years ago, and we started talking about this before the podcast started recording. And then I became unwell. So I was high on life. I was 26. I was having a ball. I had my dream job working for the National Museums of Scotland. It was my idea of the perfect career. I spent my weekends literally climbing up mountains and canoeing down rivers and doing lots of outdoor things. And then my weeks were spent working really hard. And I did burn the candle at both ends and in the middle because I was just having fun. And I didn't realize there were some big red warning flags that were saying that actually my system in general was under stress. And if I had been aware of those, potentially I could have diverted what happened next, which is I got a viral infection. And then I fundamentally didn't recover. And within 3 months, I was literally bedbound, couldn't walk, couldn't talk, couldn't feed myself. So, really extremely unwell in a very, very short period of time. My initial diagnosis was post-viral fatigue and then chronic fatigue syndrome, because I just didn't get better. So, I ended up back living in the southeast with my parents, being looked after. And spent the next 14 years trying very hard to get better and not really getting anywhere fast. And every consultant saying, hard luck, you know, you're not going to recover. How are you going to get through this? I was told I wouldn't recover, and simply refused to believe that. And eventually found the way through and got better and then trained in all the things that got me well and have been on a mission. And I think passion's a word that's overused, but I really am passionate about making sure nobody does what I did. You know, if you can get in there early enough, potentially you can divert problems. If you understand how the system works, potentially you can build your own resilience and make sure that you do stay okay under pressure. So I am on a mission to make sure that other people don't do what I did fundamentally. That's the background. And I love what I do. You know, it's not work. It's really good fun.
Janice, do you know what's
So
interesting about your story is that whenever I've had a discussion with someone who's experienced burnout and the numbers are huge, they never
yeah, they are.
describe the run-up to their burnout as being having so much fun that I didn't see those amber flags before the red came. It's usually I was I'm not you were working incredibly hard, but they describe it as almost it was a very low mood, a depressive kind of state before they go into this burnout. But you were obviously just doing so much, both work
Just did not.
and pleasure that it obviously built up. Tell me a little bit more, if you don't mind, about the warning signs that you potentially in hindsight were there that you maybe weren't able to pick up on at the time.
Things like losing my sense of humor about things that didn't used to stress me, becoming more stressed and slightly more irritable, just simple things. So fundamentally, when your stress levels rise, whatever is causing that stress, it almost doesn't matter. You're going to get a range of different symptoms, and I certainly had them. So there were some cognitive ones. I wasn't quite on top of things. I would be more forgetful. There were some emotional ones. I was a little bit more volatile and a little bit more snappy with other people in, you know, things that would normally amuse me, I stopped finding amusing. I started getting cross about, you know, those kinds of things, just sort of those early warning signs. I was getting more viruses, more bugs, more infections. My immune system wasn't as good as it used to be, those kinds of things. So people will often get a combination of cognitive, behavioral, emotional, and you know, these different physical symptoms as well. And I had a number of those. I would go to the gym and do my normal kind of workout, but I'd come back feeling tired. Whereas before I used to come back feeling energized because I'd been to the gym and got a bit of a hit of, you know, all the feel-good chemicals. So my system just wasn't responding in the way that it used to. And I simply just thought, you know, there's a lot going on right now. I'm just a bit worn out. But at 26, that wasn't normal and shouldn't have been there.
Neurovitality in the work you guys do. Tell us a little bit about that and how you've managed to turn this passion and this experience into the network really, and the work that you do with and the clients that you help.
Yeah, what I did to begin with. So when I first got better, I trained in those things that got me well. And then I started working as a therapist to basically support other people and prevent, you can turn things like chronic fatigue syndrome. It's highly controversial, but there are things you can do for a number of people. So I was really keen to work in that sphere for a while. So I did that. And then we set up an organization called Reclaim Health, which was not for profit. So working with doctors, expert ex-patients, and CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy practitioners. And we put together a book and started writing programs and started helping and supporting people and doing lots of it pro bono. And then I was giving a short presentation to a group of doctors, and somebody, a CBT specialist, saw me give a presentation and said, "I'm meant to go to Paris next week. I can't go. Could you, by any chance, step in and do the presentation for me? I just heard Paris." So, lovely. That would be amazing. I'd love to do that. And off I went. And it was then thought, can I really do this? I don't know. But it was a success. So then started working with corporates, which is really what I was doing in that particular instance, and started training them up. And then realized that through that, you can actually access a lot of people. So it's quite a nice way to speak to large numbers of people and really get a message out there that says, you can build your own resilience if you know how to. And here are some ways to do it. So giving people sort of lots of practical quick fix techniques, as well as the longer term ones. So we all know the stuff, don't we? If you want to stay resilient and you want to feel fantastic, you need to get a good night's sleep. You need to have a good work-life balance. You need to exercise and eat good food and all of this. Yeah, like this is the real world. So lots of what we do with neurovitality is look at practical things you can do that are quick fix in the moment, that have good science behind them that we know work. And that way you can start to show people how they can maintain their own resilience and develop and build it. So you give them the right skill sets, you're onto a winner. That's really what we're aiming to do.
Well, we're in the
So
right place. We're all about practicality on this podcast, and applying useful tools. It's really what we want to everyone to take away. Is it's all very well listening to information, but I'm sure you'll agree it's the execution of that and the implementation. Before we go into the how, let's go into the what is it? Let's talk. We're talking about resilience today. Janice, what's your definition of resilience? And can you tell us a little bit about maybe any misconceptions there are around what that means, particularly in the workplace?
Yeah, I think resilience is being able to be yourself, to handle difficulty, to function really effectively and stay at the top of your game if you choose to. It is not about life being full of fluffy bunnies and everything's wonderful. That it's about how you handle it when the going gets tough, how quickly you bounce back. It's those kind of things. And somebody who's resilient will have ongoing energy, be able to stay at a pretty consistent level, will be able to self-manage really effectively when the going gets tough. And it's not pretending they're always going to be, feeling utterly amazing, because that's not reality, but it's having the ability to come through things when things are potentially slightly more difficult and come out the other side, and to know that you can. So it's that internal confidence thing as well that I think really matters.
Do you think societally we've become less resilient?
I think that's hugely controversial.
Tell the truth, give us your perspective.
Happily, I think we are much better at discussing topics like mental ill health and stress. We have a much better vocabulary around it, but I think younger people in particular don't have the skill sets they need to be resilient. And I think we're missing a trick if we're not teaching those. I think we should be teaching them in every school. I think we should be teaching them to all young people, because potentially that would prevent so many problems further down the line. If somebody could, for example, recognize their warning signs that they are less resilient than is ideal, and have some simple coping strategies they could put in the mix to make sure they were okay, then we would be onto a winner. We're just not setting people up with the skills they need. That's what we should be doing.
So, do you believe then that the potentially the issues in the workplace now are because we weren't equipped with those skills when we were younger? Do you think that's there's been a gap in emotional education, if that's the right way to phrase it?
I think there are lots of people that are trying really hard to make a difference. The education system, it's not like it's not trying. But I think we were discussing this slightly earlier. I think often we don't give those slightly tougher messages. We're trying to be too nice about things. And actually, you know, there's a degree of truth. So it's important to, yes, talk about things and flag up difficulties. But someone who's resilient then focuses on the solutions. They don't spend lots of time going over and over and over the difficulty, because that just builds the neurology of difficulty and it builds the neurology of stress. It doesn't build the neurology that's actually going to support you. So I think it's really about teaching people how to hack their chemistry so that they can be resilient when the going gets tough. So they don't, you know, someone who is resilient does not take, you know, if you said something to me that potentially, you know, I could find offensive, I have a choice about whether I find it offensive or not. You know, if I do find it offensive, I've just handed, and I start to have a strong reaction to it, I've just handed all my control over to you. So how do we teach people to stay in control of themselves and fundamentally have good emotional intelligence skills? So good self-awareness, good self-regulation. You know, I do not have to take offense at things unless I choose to. I do not, you know, you can't make me angry unless I let you. You can't make me have a reaction unless I allow it. So often we don't have that skill to take the metaphorical step back and stay in control of us. So I think it's teaching people those skills and then teaching them good relationship development skills. You know, how do you have good, honest conversations with people? You know, how do you actually manage those relationships so that you do stay okay?
Yeah.
There's so much in it. It's huge.
When you think of the topic, I mean, I'm just even thinking generationally between my grandparents and growing up and the world that they would have lived in, and my godchildren now and the world that they live in. I mean, you're really talking about four generations different, but you know, my grandparents wouldn't have known the term political correctness. They wouldn't have known. And there are things that we talk about now, I mean, could be in any sphere. Transgender, or there's words that, you know, they wouldn't have had any notion of what it would mean, let alone what the connotations or the implications or almost the emotional, the loaded words that we have in today's context. It makes me wonder about, you know, the world that they grew up in. It was pretty much tough love, like literally post-war, you got on with it. It was very much, you know, socks up, roll your socks up, and what's the phrase, is it bootstraps? No.
Yeah, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Yeah,
pull yourself up by your bootstraps, there you go, and go. Versus now, we, even the tone of voice that we use around kids and around younger adults, I feel is very, very different. That the world is very, very different.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is. But I also think there are lots of extra stressors on young people today that certainly I didn't experience. You know, when I went home at night, I left school behind me. If I wanted to speak to my friends on the phone, I could do. And it was a party line that you sometimes got, you know, Mrs. Heathercott down the road accidentally when you picked up the line. Yeah, you couldn't have such access to so much stimulus. And I think one of the things with young people today is they just don't have a chance to switch off. So, you know, they're constantly on these. That's not necessarily useful. There's a constant stress level that's up here that potentially we didn't have when we were younger. So our attention has changed. You know, I think there are a number of extra stresses that are different to the ones that we experienced, or certainly I experienced when I was younger.
Yeah, certainly. I'd hate to be a teen growing up now. I was in the age where we had phones, but they weren't yet at the time where you could send, you know, videos, or there wasn't internet on your phones, is probably the easiest way to.
We didn't constant messaging. Yeah.
And it wasn't that, I mean, it was 10 pence a text message and you had to shoehorn it into the certain character. That was the world I grew up in.
Yeah.
So I do really feel for parents trying to make great decisions for their kids in this landscape. But when it comes to building that resilience, Jens, how can we go about doing that? How can we start to have these conversations and build up this almost, it starts with self-regulation, doesn't it? Am I correct in saying that?
Well, I think it starts with fundamental good emotional intelligence. So good old Dan Goleman and emotional intelligence, the concept, you know, fundamentally, if you understand yourself and you know what the kinds of things that might stress, so what stresses me may not stress you. You know, what has an impact on my resilience that's negative may be different to the things that impact you. So it's understanding your potential stress and stressors, and then having some good self-regulatory skills in there. So fun having your own toolkit. You know, I very much do have my feel-good toolkit. You know, I know what makes me feel okay. And you can start to really train yourself to be less reactive to stress and stressors. So resilience is a skill, anyone can learn it. You know, it's not something I have and you don't. We all have the ability to be resilient. There are times in our lives when we have more stresses than others, and therefore to stay resilient is difficult, but we absolutely can if we have a good toolkit in there. And that involves a range of different things. So being able to self-regulate is important. Simple stuff like, for example, slowing down your breathing to 6 to 8 breaths a minute for 10 minutes helps to reboot your central nervous system. If you're feeling really stressed, you know, you need to be aware of when you're stressed. Most of us aren't. You know, we just keep on plowing through the day, assuming we're going to be all right. And then we end up at the end of the day, you know, like this. If we actually stopped and took breaks and recognized that we had things called ultradian rhythms, which means that, you know, ideally we all ought to be taking a break every 90 minutes, approximately, because it's just how your system works. You know, we would then be able to work smarter. We wouldn't have to work as hard. We wouldn't have to work as long because we'd be optimizing our chemistry and working with our body rather than working against it. So, you know, simple things like not taking breaks. Really important you take a break. Your body is not designed to just keep plowing on. It's not how it works. So having those kind of skill sets in the mix make a difference. There are any numbers, so you can manage your body like that. But also starting to understand how your brain works, and your brain will wind you up given half a chance, you know. So understanding how to manage that also really is important when it comes to resilience. So, you know, the brain and how the brain works, if you stop and think about it, most of us will catastrophize, we'll run our own personal disaster movies and we'll star in them. You know, we all need some kind of we all do it. And the brain has a propensity to do that because it's set up that way. It's set up to look for problems. So 2/3 of the neurons in the central part of your brain designed to look for problems. And then we find them, and then we catastrophize about them. We run and we expect to feel okay. And we're not going to if that's how we're letting our brain run us. We're not running it. So understanding a bit about your brain and managing that also matters.
Janice, I'm laughing. We're in the midst of moving house, and this word catastrophizing has one that my partner has just learned, and has something that I've been prone to doing is always looking at, right, what's going to happen, but what could go wrong? The male brain, tell me, does the male brain work in a different way? Because it doesn't seem to register the same.
Depends on what he's used to doing.
Easy breezy, deal with it when it happens. No, that's not me. In terms of the toolkit, you mentioned breath work there. You mentioned taking breaks. Do you have any other favorite? I'm going to pick your brain about some of your favorite tools that you've used or you've used with clients that people can implement into their working day, the sort of short, sharp little strategies.
Yeah, I mean, taking the break is really important. So, you know, my partner will often, he smokes, he will say, I need a cigarette. He doesn't need a cigarette, he needs a break. And he comes back feeling much better, not because he's been smoking, but because he's gone downstairs, he's gone outside, he's stopped, he's slowed down, he's taken 5 minutes out, and he's taken some deep breaths. It's the deep breaths that makes him feel better. If he could go and do that bit without the cigarette, he'd be on to a winner. Yeah, that's really what we want. Also, so recognizing how you're feeling, I will often use the comment to myself, not as a way I'm thinking right or wrong, is it useful? And if it's not useful, what would be a more useful way of thinking? Because often our thought processes, so if we are thinking something is stressful, our system will be releasing stress chemicals into it. So we will be activating without even realizing we're doing it. Our sympathetic nervous system, which is the stress part of the nervous system, and does not feel sympathetic at all. It feels really unpleasant. You know, it's a bit that feels awful. So if we notice that we're doing that, hang on a second, stop. And I would also stop and ask myself, right, what do I need right now? Do I need a break for 5 minutes? Do I need a glass of water, actually? I'm a bit dehydrated. Am I getting hangry? Do I need to go and get some food? What's going on for me right now? So that self-awareness piece, and then what do I need to put in the mix right now to sort this out? And then take back control. Don't wait till the end of the day to recover. We should be doing it throughout the day. Don't wait till the weekend or your next holiday to recover. If you do that, you're on to a, you're going to cause a problem. So understand what your stress levels are doing. And we've all got some, an allostatic load, so a stress load. So if mine is nice and low, then I have got this much coping ability. I've got tons of it, and it's fabulous. So, if I'm driving in London, somebody pulls out in front of me in traffic, I would just think they're a bad driver, and I would have forgotten about it in seconds. If my stress level is here, same driver pulls out in front of me in traffic, I am going to make rude signs. I am going to say all sorts of things that I couldn't say on this call. I'm going to have a really strong reaction, because now I've only got this much coping ability. And it's not that the person's done anything different, it's that I have changed my ability to cope. So my resilience has gone down. If my stress level is up here and the person does exactly the same thing, goodness help them. You're going to want to slam on the brakes, get out the car and go and punch them. And they haven't done anything different. It's that I can't cope with it. And it's the same with if you're dealing with your children, it's the same in the workplace, it's the same. What's your stress level doing? And where's your level of resilience? You've got high stress level, your resilience is down here. So what are you going to do to reboot? Looking after you. We often aren't compassionate. I'm on a roll, sorry. We're often not compassionate to ourselves. We're very good at being compassionate to other people, especially women. Massive generalization, but we're often very good at putting everybody else first, and we don't fit our own personal oxygen masks. We go, I must look after, I must do, I have to. We use all of these words to drive ourselves forwards. If we're not looking after us, we can't look after other people as effectively. So it's not selfish to put us into the mix. It's absolutely vital, and we often don't. So we're good at being compassionate to others. We're really bad at doing it for ourselves.
Janice, have you heard of the concept of micro stressors?
Yeah, little ones that we gradually build up.
Yeah, and I had a conversation, a really quite a thought-provoking conversation a couple of weeks ago about the importance of managing micro stressors in the day, the ones that kind of go under the radar and that we don't really register. And I'm going to play devil's advocate slightly and put myself in the position of a client who's heard everything, or they're listening to everything that we're discussing today. Take the little breaks, make sure that you're making time for you, do some breathing, make sure you're drinking enough water, make a nutritious meal. And I can hear her almost the cogs turning, going, Caroline, I don't have time, I don't have time, I've got a deadline, I've got this coming up, I don't have time, I don't have time, I don't have time. What would you say to that individual?
That if you are not taking the breaks, what starts to happen? So, if you want to work at the top of your game, you have to be looking after yourself. If you are not, what starts to happen is you reach the top of your peak production curve and then you start scooting over the other side. The issue with that is that as soon as our stress levels go up, our neocortex, our clever thinking brain, is hijacked by stress chemicals. So you think by pushing forwards, and I haven't got time, you think that actually, and we do that because it's the way our chemistry is set up. We're set up to kind of keep driving forwards. But if you don't take that break, you will have to work longer because you cannot work smarter. You will not be as good at handling the potential difficulties that come up in life. You will not be as good at handling other people because your stress levels are higher, so your emotional volatility is higher, so you are more likely to say something you're later going to regret. You are less likely to do as good a job on the piece of work that you're trying to get finished. You are more likely to make mistakes because your neocortex, your clever thinking brain, is not working as well. So, you're actually doing the opposite of what you really need to do a really good job and hit that deadline when you need to hit it. So it's a false economy. Yeah, you're kind of thinking it's going to be a good idea. Your system is set up to make you think that, but actually we need to be doing what often feels counterintuitive. And that is taking a 5 minute break, allowing the system to come back into balance. Then we can work smart, then we can work faster, then we can work more effectively. We physiologically can't if we've gone over the top of our peak production curve and we are not giving ourselves those metaphorical breaks and physical breaks. So it really does matter.
Do you think our workplace environment or physical environment or culture, whether that be online or at home, is conducive to that or allows for us to take those moments?
It varies from culture to culture. So, you know, I work globally and I work in lots of different corporations and lots of different companies. If you see a good company that is working effectively, then absolutely that's there. But often, you know, there are key stressors. There are things that are going to universal stressors that will stress everybody. And in the workplace, there are things like bad management, 24/7, you know, work product where you just don't have a chance to have a break. And I do work in some companies where even if you're, you know, working hybrid and you're back in the house, you have to pick up the phone within 10 minutes. Yeah, well, what happens if I'm in the bath? What happens if I'm, you know, something's got it doesn't actually make sense. And those things, it depends on the culture fundamentally. So key workplace stressors are things like oppressive management styles, so unhelpful management styles, not having autonomy, 24/7 work culture, internal politics. All of those things will have a negative impact on somebody's resilience and ability to stay okay. So making sure that we have a good culture is really important. Making sure it's inclusive, all of those good things, you know, we're psychologically safe, we can flag up if there's a potential issue. That doesn't mean the workplace becomes a therapy session. It means that if I'm concerned about something, I can come to you and tell you about it without feeling that it's going to be held against me in the future. So if I have that kind of safety, then we're much more likely to be okay. So it depends on the individual culture of the company is the short answer.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned there actually, do you think that remote working, I'm seeing a more of a transition back into a hybrid, I have to say. Yeah. It's definitely yeah. seems to be. And I've heard, particularly in the last 12 months, companies actually insisting more so on a minimum number of days in the office. Yeah. So we seem to be really transitioning into kind of this hybrid model. How do you feel that that is helping or hindering individuals?
Again, I think it varies from person to person, which is where when it comes to building resilience, it's about building your own personal toolkit, isn't it? Because what works for me may not work for you. And, you know, I'm very much an extrovert and I get my energy by being around other people. So for me, yes, I can work in a hybrid. I can work from home and not see people for days. That's actually okay. But I work better when I'm bouncing off other people. For somebody who's more of an introvert, then actually being in the office can sometimes be absolutely draining. And you know, at the end of the day, we go, let's all go out for a drink. And it's the last thing somebody who's an introvert wants to do. They want to go home and get their space and their peace. You know, it's horses for courses. Having people around you helps you to stay more level. It enables you to ground. And, you know, we get a hit of oxytocin when we're around people that we really care about. So, you know, those kind of things can really help to hack our chemistry and keep us level and keep us more resilient. One of the issues if we spend too much time by ourselves is we do that rumination and then we start to catastrophize like you've been doing.
Hands up, 100%. I noticed, Janice, just from a person, I mean, we discussed this before on our... We could work from anywhere in the world. Hypothetically, yeah. We're very, very fortunate to be in yeah. that position. I purposefully seek out co-working spaces, coffee shops, particularly coffee shops where I know the other people that are there. I think we are craving culture. I think we are craving community. I think
yes.
we miss it. And okay, I'm the complete opposite to you. I am an introverted extrovert. So it's kind of a half and half. If I don't have the time and space, I find it really, really draining. But yeah. even with that introverted side, we need connection. We need yeah, we do. That around us. I also think it's a great productivity hack. You yeah. don't faff around when you've got other people around you. You don't. Oh, they might be looking at my screen or they'll see, you know, but we don't. We don't faff around the same way. Well, I certainly don't. So I believe though that we haven't maybe been given the chance to find out what works for us, and it's making people less resilient because it's all this change. Are we in? Are we at home? Do I have choices? Are yeah. there... you know, kind of politics behind my choices? Will I be seen in a certain way if I choose to spend more time at home? I think these are all real things.
Oh, they're really important. Yeah.
People are uncertain. It feels that way.
Yeah. And I think, again, you know, if you look at the key things that stress people, that's another one of them. You know, constant change is something that people find really difficult, because, again, you know, the system is set up, it likes familiarity, it takes more effort and more brain energy when we have changes to think about. So we like familiarity. So we like to make things unconscious and automatic as fast as we can. It's part of how our system works. So again, if we're experiencing lots of change, then that takes energy. That's quite hard going. You know, the system often will see it as a threat. So it's recognizing those things, and okay, what do we do about those? And that needs really good communication skills from managers, and you know, we need all managers to be trained in all of this, so that they know how to navigate that. And senior leaders need to be, you know, really in on that as well. So if there is lots of change happening, it needs to be very, very clearly communicated. And exactly what the expectations are needs to be, you know, it's good communication skills. We need those in there.
So from the work you do and spending so much time within these corporations, you'll see it. Am I correct in thinking that it needs to come top down, but we also need to be taking real command of our personal resilience? Is that the way that we need to, is that the is kind of two sides of the coin here?
I think there are three. I think we need to have, it needs to be senior leadership led, and you need to get complete buy-in from the top. Yeah, and in terms of return on investment, if you invest in people's resilience and well-being, it's money very, very well spent, because you are then setting your people up to succeed. If you don't do that, you're potentially setting them up to fail. So that needs to be in there, and that has a knock-on impact, obviously, on your company. You also need to train all managers so they can recognize the warning signs of when somebody's not resilient and knows what to do about it. So that does not mean they need to be the therapist, but it means that they need to understand what's happening and potentially be able to signpost people to whatever it is that is going to enable them to rebalance if they need extra help. Their role shifts as somebody moves along the well-being continuum. You know, if they're at this end and they're healthy and well, fabulous, they've got a certain role to play. If they've moved into being slightly stressed, then their role shifts. They need to understand what that is and what to do about it. If somebody starts to move to being unwell, they need to be absolutely in there and supporting, and potentially then they can stop somebody going off sick. So if we know what to do, we can really divert it. And then you need everybody to have a good general understanding, health, well-being, you know, what it actually looks like to be resilient, what that means, how you stay resilient. So you need to be three levels, I think.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, this is something that I've been going through in my head more and more, and reflection, both my own personal way that I'm conducting myself, but also how I'm coaching my clients. When I was setting up the business, and you know what it's like when you have a new business, you throw absolutely everything into it. It's, you know, 6-7 days a week sometimes. Yeah. You don't sleep, you stay up till stupid o'clock, your well-being goes out the window, and all of these things. And I used to be and have this incredibly militant way of talking to myself. It was very, very very, very harsh sometimes, too much listening to David Goggins, and just said, pull your bootstraps up and all this, you know, you must get on with it. It was very, 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 very harsh. The problem with that, I found, is that that often leads to an awful lot of success. And as the business has matured, and as I hope I've matured in tandem with it, I found myself becoming a little bit softer. The word compassion comes out more. We've mentioned it today. What would you say to someone who... I'm sitting on the fence really about where I am now. I don't know if you've ever heard people, business owners, talk about this, but this is just a personal thing I've experienced. Is almost the harsher my language to myself, the tougher I was, the bigger my success.
And I think so. We all have a kind of internal coach and an internal voice, don't we? That for me, one of the things is, if I wouldn't say it to a friend, don't say it to me. So is one of my kind of catchphrases. If I wouldn't say, what advice would I be giving a friend? Which gives you that metaphorical distance from the thing and how you're seeing it, and potentially enables you to stay calmer, more balanced, you know, and but we need different types of internal coaches at different times, don't we? So, you know, sometimes I need the slightly sterner coach that goes, come on, Janice, you can do this. You know, yeah, don't be ridiculous. Of course you can do this. Go for it, girl. You know, I need that one. Other times I need the, you can do this. You'll be okay. Yeah, it's all right. Come on, I've got you. I've got your back. You'll be okay. So sometimes I need a softer coach depending on the situation. So for me, it's very much about coaching myself according to my needs. And what do I need right now? Yeah, do I need actually to give myself a stern talking to and crack on with it? Or do I right now need, you know, what do I want? What's my goal? What am I trying to achieve? And, you know, if you think about when you're working with children or young people, yeah, if you're a football coach and you're dealing with teenagers and one of them keeps on turning up late, you're going to go, right, come on, what's happening? You know, you're going to be a bit more stern and you're coaching. If you're coaching the little ones and one of them falls over and hurts themselves, you know, you're going to use a completely different coaching style. So it's very much about what coaching style do you need to be resilient and to get to where you want to be, keeping your end goal in mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think those things matter. But I do regularly use the one, if I wouldn't say it to a friend, don't say it to myself.
That's a good one. I think we seem to be, for me, we seem to be, and I don't know whether it's just, I think we feels like we are going into a really compassion culture. Very, has to be. And I'm saying there is a place for that. Absolutely. I'm wondering if there is a bit of, you know, where is the ethos that came from our grandparents, that kind of that. And really, I'm treading the line there at the moment with myself and with my coaching style as well. I think we can be our own worst critics sometimes, though, about the way that we talk to ourselves. Yeah. And I'm conscious of that. But I just think it's an interesting discussion. Where are we on that spectrum at any time? And is society going more one way? Do we need to? Maybe it would benefit us to be a little bit more direct.
Direct. Yeah. That's that word. Yeah, direct.
And I said to you, I don't know if it's just because we're British. I honestly don't, because I go to Europe and everyone is boom, 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 boom. And I don't know if it's a British thing.
I think it varies. And I think the Brits often don't talk about things and they skirt around issues and they're less straight. So I think good assertive communication skills can be a really useful thing to learn. Certainly when it comes to remaining resilient, you know, if I'm being assertive, I am respecting your needs and wants, and I'm also respecting my own. And we're having a conversation about where we meet in the middle. Yeah, and that enables us to stay nicely balanced and keeps the resilience where it needs to be. So I, you know, it's those kind of things I think are really important. And I think it's about having a realistic culture. So it's not about pretending that everything's all lovely all the time, because it's really not. It's not about trying to make it really lovely all the time, because it's not how life works. It's about how do you deal with what's in front of you and what are your goals and how are you going to get there? What's and recognizing the problem, but what's the solution? Someone who's resilient always shifts to the solution. So, you know, if I stop and think about when I was ill and was told very much, you are not going to recover, it was okay, hang on a second. First of all, my belief system is that I don't believe that. You know, what am I believing? I believe I can. Then the question is how, and that's the bit I'm missing. I don't know the how yet, but I'm going to keep on working until I find it. So I didn't see, when things didn't work out, I didn't see them as a failure. I saw it as part of the learning curve. Okay, that didn't work, but I'm another day closer to getting better. So what's next? So it's having that ability that I think really matters.
Being able to jump into the proactive as quickly as possible. Yeah.
Recognizing the problem and then what do I do about it? Solution. And you keep in control that way.
Yeah. Janice, I'd love it. And you've brought a ton of value to this episode. I could talk to you all day. I mean that sincerely. If someone is listening to today's episode, and we talked about this, we really like to give you practical and actionable steps that you can take away. If someone has gotten to this point in the episode and they identify in themselves that they're not as resilient as they wish they could be, or, you know, they wish they were a little bit, had a little bit more toughness around them, maybe. What are some of the things, or one thing that you would recommend that they try going forward to try and bolster or build that resilience?
I think start to think about your goal. What are you wanting to achieve? What does resilience look like to you? And then start to think about proactively, how am I going to get there? Taking those little micro breaks and starting to understand, okay, how am I feeling right now? And what do I need to do? If it's not great, what do I need to do to change that? So those simple things, to reboot your system, just slowing down your breathing. Nobody needs to know you're doing that. For example, in a business meeting, if you just slow down your breathing, sit back in your chair so you're not so engaged and caught up in the disaster movie that's running in front of you. If you do this, sit back slightly, slow down your breathing, 6 to 8 breaths a minute for 10 minutes, you're going to help to reboot your central nervous system, which brings your higher brain, your neocortex, back online, which means you can then start to think logically about what's next. If you're feeling stressed, getting up and moving makes a difference. So, you know, big postures. If you think Tigger versus Eeyore, you know, in Winnie the Pooh, you want to be doing more of a Tigger. And I don't suggest you leap around the office, but Jeff, just getting up and moving is going to make a difference and start to change your state. And then start to think about, okay, what do I want? Start to learn about how to manage your brain as well. So not as the way I'm thinking right or wrong, is it useful?
That's going to be the tagline for this episode. Dennis, if anyone wants to find out more about you and the work that you do, where can they find you? Where do you hang out?
Get in touch at neurovitalitylimited.com. We are there online. I'm also on LinkedIn. That's a great place to link with me. Yes. So find me, Janice Benning, Neurovitality Limited on LinkedIn. Happily as well. We've got tons of information. I love sharing it. So please do get in touch. I've got literally 10 top tips. I will send you the information.
Amazing. Janice, I'm going to put all of your details in the show notes so someone can just scroll and click and they can find you. But I have to say, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. And thank you so much for your expertise today.
Caroline, thank you very much. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks for the chat.
I want to say a huge thank you to Janice again for her time on the Health Hacks podcast. It was an absolute pleasure to have her on, and I really hope that this episode was very thought-provoking for you. It certainly was for me, and there are some ideas in this episode that I will certainly be taking away and building upon and considering more, both in my own resilience and how to support others to bring out the best qualities themselves and help build and bolster their personal resilience. And one of the things that I'm pondering more and more is the place of resilience. And for me, we have a lot of discussions in the health and well-being space. And I think building your personal resilience is one of the best things that you can spend time doing, because, you know, we talk about diet and exercise and all of these things, but if we have that resilience piece in place, I really do think a lot of the other elements come much easier. And spending time reflecting on what resilience means to us is so, so important. So as I say, it's been incredibly thought-provoking for me, and I hope that you share a similar mentality. So thank you, Janice, very much for your time. As I mentioned, I will link all of her details in the show notes below. So if you want to find out any more about the work that she does, and I know that she will be open to questions or any comments that you may have, so do reach out. LinkedIn, as she mentioned, is the best place to find her. As ever, you the listener, thank you so much for your time and attention. Particularly if you've gotten to this point in the podcast, I do really appreciate it, and I appreciate how much our attention now is such a finite resource. And so if you have gotten to this point, I thank you very much. If you do want to show your support for the show, if it has been useful in any way, shape or form to your health and well-being journey, and you would like to show your support, there are two ways to do that. One is to hit the follow or subscribe button on your podcast platform of choice. You're probably listening to me on Health Hacks, on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. So you can hit the follow or subscribe button there, or better yet, send this episode to someone in your inner circle, someone who you feel would also benefit from the topics that we cover here on the podcast. It would be incredibly appreciated by me. And if you're interested in one-to-one coaching, if you'd love to find out more about the work I do with my client base, if you are one of the big topics that we've been diving into, and you'll know from the podcast series that we are running, is menopause, perimenopause, menopause or post-menopause. If you're interested in women's health, specifically around this topic, do get in touch. I'd love to hear from you and find out more about your current lifestyle, but your health goals for the remainder of this year while balancing your perimenopause, menopause or post-menopausal symptoms. Okay, I think that's more than enough for me for this week. We'll see you next week on the Health Hacks podcast.